Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. How you doing tonight? Did you have a good weekend? It's always nice to have that extra day, right? If you got it. A lot of people did not get it, still had to go to work. We had the day off, so it was a lot of fun. We went to a drive-in last night. Took Molly and some home-cooked popcorn and watched Indiana Jones and the whatever, the crystal head of the alien zombie beings who left clues all around the planet. It was a good movie. No, Molly didn't watch it. We took her little portable DVD player, and she watched The Rescuers. So, anyway, I hope you had a good Memorial Day. That is the extent of our celebrating today. Memorial Day is a day that, when I was a kid, it used to be the day my mom would take me downtown Toledo for a parade with all the marching units who had only not that long ago come out of World War II. And it was very stirring. I learned early on to salute the flag and be happy when I saw the phalanxes of soldiers marching by and the flags and the VFW guys from World War I, for God's sake, were still around when I was a kid. And later on then, the Korean vets. And it seems to me that the parade was always on a Sunday, which I guess is the way memory screws you up. It must have been. Only we didn't call it Memorial Day then. We called it Veterans Day or whatever. I think they called it Flag Day. I'm not sure. I just know that it honored veterans, I think, unless, again, memory is fooling me a bit here. But as I got older and started to realize what the U.S. military had been used for repeatedly by both Democratic and Republican administrations, it became more and more difficult for me to demonstrate that blind loyalty and to call anyone who wore a uniform a hero, even though that seemed to be what everybody else was involved in. You know, the heroes, even if they served stateside during the lull between Korea and Vietnam, they were still referred to as military heroes. We lived in a three-story walk-up in Toledo, and on the second story, there was a woman who lived there when I was a little kid, whose husband was actually in the army, serving either in the European theater, as they call it, or the Pacific theater, I'm not sure. But when he came home from his service, I can remember the shrieking and yelling and of joy on the second story of the three-story walk-up. I had three uncles who served in World War II. One was a conscientious objector and wound up in France serving as a medic. And one was in combat, and the other was in army supply, I think. But I've had problems. Maybe I don't know, and I feel bad about this. I've had problems with this holiday for the longest time. To celebrate the misuse of our soldiers and Marines. There were an awful lot of videos over the weekend on television, I'm sure you saw them, of graveside presentations of folded flags and the grieving families, the little kids who are there trying to process or even comprehend that the open grave is for their dad. And, you know, there were a couple times this weekend when I watched some video on the news, I just sat there and wept because it just too much to see these little kids, not so little, I don't mean three-year-olds, I mean, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12-year-old kids whose father or in one horrible video, mother who was being buried because of her death caused by a lying, traitorous bastard in the White House who sent all these soldiers into combat based on lies and deception. Every single death, every wounded soldier from this particular conflict is dead or wounded because of the lies of George Bush and his administration. And I defy anyone to disagree with that. It's an impossibility. So, watching some of these horrifically sad ceremonies over this Memorial Day, at a very safe remove, you know, I'm sitting at home watching it on television. These people are actually there in Arlington or various national cemeteries around the country with the full military funerals and, in some instances, the firing of the rifles, the playing of taps, presentation of the folded flag. And it really was hard to bear, hard to think about, for me anyway. Maybe other people can look at that and say, yeah, God bless them. They died for our freedom. And I look at that and say, yeah, God bless them. They were murdered by George Bush. Absolutely murdered. As surely as if he and whoever was ultimately responsible for the attack on this country were co-conspirators in sending our soldiers into a battle that had nothing whatsoever to do with that attack on September 11th, 2001. And I couldn't get past it. When I saw the video of Bush at, where was he, at the Tomb of the Unknown, Unknowns, or Arlington, wherever he was, standing there today with military people around, or not today, but on Monday, with military people around him, presenting the wreath, and then, you know, it's enough to send me screaming into the woods to watch that. How can a person, this is a part I can't, and it's so easy to say, well, he's insane, or he's lacking compassion, or, you know, he's a madman. That's easy to do. And maybe it's true. Maybe it's the bottom line truth with this. But I'm still left with the question. How can this man stand there, this George Bush, who was a coward in his own time to do the military thing, an absolute coward from start to finish, in addition to being a deserter, and who now in this stage in his life, based on lies, he has sent 4,087 men and women to their deaths. And 40,000 more with physical wounds, and another 200,000 with severe mental disorders, and God knows how many who've committed suicide. How can a man like Bush stand there in front of a tomb or a memorial dedicated to people who have been sent into these wars based on lies, deception, corporate aggression, and especially Iraq veterans? How can this man do it? How in the hell can somebody do that? Stand there all solemn looking as though it matters one bit to him about these deaths and these aching families and these grieving children. I can't get my mind around that. I can't. To me, that is not human. Again, it's very easy to just say, oh, well, he's nuts. Well, he's not human. Well, he doesn't have an emotional infrastructure like most human beings. Yeah, that's very easy. But what if it's true? What if it's true? What if George Bush is so devoid of anything remotely resembling sympathy or empathy, the kinds of emotions most people start to develop when they're, what, two and a half, three? And by the time they're 5, 6, 7, 8, it's a full-blown part of their character to feel empathy or sympathy or compassion. I don't know how he does it. It's not a happy holiday for me, and it hasn't been, and it's not a holiday. It's Memorial Day. Try to remember the people who were sent to their deaths, especially by George W. Bush, based on absolutely nothing but lies. And the sun is a-going down upon the sacred cow. Ring them bells, sweet mother, for the poor man's son. Ring them bells so the world will know that God is one. For the shepherd is asleep where the willows weep.
and the mountains are filled with
sleeping suicide, singing, oh my God. In my mind, I got a sleeping genocide, singing, oh my God. In my mind, I got a sleeping suicide, singing, oh my God.
Hi, higher. It's more of Mike Malone.
We keep moving on.
21 past the hour. Yeah, here it is. Memorial Day was called Decoration Day. That's what my mother used to call it, Decoration Day. And Veterans Day was called Armistice Day. That was the end of World War I, I believe. The 11th hour, the 11th day, the 11th month, that sort of stuff. Who remembers that anymore? Decoration Day. That's right. You were supposed to go decorate the graves. Bob kind of sums it up, sent me a quick email. Mike, we went to the National Cemetery, where my uncle now resides. He put in a couple of years during the Korean War, so he qualified to move in. Nearby his section of the cemetery is a fairly new subdivision, which seems to be filling up with Iraq War veterans. Each headstone and each marker throughout the cemetery had its own mini American flag. American flags lined the avenues crisscrossing the cemetery. There weren't that many flowers on the graves, but one grave in the midst of hundreds stood out because someone had attached an American flag helium balloon to it. I went up to the headstone. This man died in Iraq. Beloved husband, brother, uncle, and father. There's a little yellow plastic truck at the base of the stone. Sadness, grief, rage. The headline from Crooks and Liars said it best. Dead troops remembered by president who had them killed. James in Seattle wrote in, Mike, McCain's infantile and nonsensical retort to Senator Obama concerning McCain's having, quote, worn the uniform, end quote, begs a very crucial question. Did McCain honor or disgrace the uniform? Let me digress. Over the weekend, or maybe it was last Thursday or Friday, when McCain, lashing out, which apparently is what McCain does best, because of something Barack Obama said, and I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but it doesn't matter. You don't have to send it. But McCain made the statement that since Barack Obama had not worn the uniform, and he, McCain, had, there would never be a time in McCain's life when he would listen to somebody who hadn't, quote, worn the uniform, end quote, as he, McCain, had, which to me is just absolute nonsense. But anyway, James in Seattle, who has been there, writes, many of us combat vets believe McCain has disgraced the uniform on many occasions when he has repeatedly voted against congressional legislation on behalf of veterans. Many of us believe McCain's father, Admiral John S. McCain Jr., disgraced the uniform when he was involved in the cover-up of the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty back in 68. Did McCain also disgrace the uniform when he lost all those planes during his military career? Did McCain disgrace the uniform when he denounced America, albeit after being tortured? Certainly, McCain disgraced the uniform when not too long ago he voted for torture to continue. Did General Colin Powell disgrace the uniform when he acted as the designated liar before the entire world at the United Nations for the Bush administration? Did Powell also disgrace the uniform when he sat in on those torture planning sessions? Did Jeffrey Dahmer, veteran, deceased serial killer, cannibal, disgrace the uniform when he was stationed in Germany and murdered there? Did those 75 rent-a-whore generals disgrace the uniform when they violated federal laws in propagandizing Americans? Do all the members of the military who partake in the embezzlement-based Pentagon accounting system, you know, the one where they charge $500,000 to ship a couple of screws by way of UPS, do they disgrace the uniform? The question is not in the wearing of the uniform, but whether one honors or disgraces it. This has always been the ultimate question since the Revolutionary Army existed. Yeah, whenever I hear a politician talking about disgracing the uniform, I immediately know that I'm in the presence of either a coward or a fake patriot or someone who is just using the issue of someone else's death for political means. Spitfire wrote, McCain was tortured. The claim by the Bush thugs is that torture works. Someone needs to ask McCain if it worked on him. Yeah, that's a question that I don't know what McCain did when he was a prisoner of the North Vietnamese. I've read reports that said he said anything they wanted him to say because they were torturing him. I don't know how true that is. Vietnam Veterans Against John McCain.com talks about this on their website. I've read about it in various excerpts, various books, excerpts of books about McCain's so-called military career. Apparently, this guy was not a good soldier. I realized he was in the Navy. He was not a good military man whatsoever. Graduated near the bottom of his class at Annapolis, I think. Is that right? Never would have gone into the service had it not been for the fact that his father was in command of all military forces in Southeast Asia and the Pacific during this time, the time of the Vietnam War. So I don't know that much about McCain other than, you know, what I've picked up, not from the Internet necessarily, but just over the course of the past 15, 20 years about his so-called military career. And it doesn't seem to be very, very honorable to me. But that's just my opinion. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Well, I've just got one question and I want an answer. Tell me, who would Jesus bomb? Maybe Jesus would bomb the Afghans on some kind of vengeful whim. Maybe Jesus would drive an M1 tank and he would shoot Saddam.
Proof that fish and humans can coexist peacefully. It's More of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Yeah, Scott McClellan has a new book out, What Happened Inside the Bush White House and Washington's Culture of Deception. That's the title of which Scott McClellan was an integral part for so long. It's put out by Public Affairs Books, and I'm going to quote a little bit from it this evening, from some of the stuff that's making the rounds. Here's one quick excerpt from Scott McClellan's book. The most powerful leader in the world had called upon me to speak on his behalf and help restore credibility he lost amid the failure to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. So I stood at the White House briefing room podium in front of the glare of the Klieg lights for the better part of 2 weeks and publicly exonerated two of the senior most aides in the White House, Karl Rove and Scooter Libby. There was one problem. It was not true. I had unknowingly passed along false information, and five of the highest-ranking officials in the administration were involved in my doing so. Rove, Libby, the Vice President, the President's Chief of Staff, and the President himself. But impeachment's off the table, eh, Nance? Huh? And James writes in, Mike, I just had an epiphany of irony. What if Simple Scotty's new book does more to bring down Bush and Cheney and company than anything and everyone else? I didn't think the little weasel had it in him. He must have a terminal disease. Unbelievable. Oh, well, we'll do a little bit of that later on. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention, coming up at top of the next hour, we'll be talking with Jack Nelson Pallmeyer. I'm sorry, bottom of the next hour. Half past the next hour. An hour from now. Jack Nelson Pallmeyer. He's a candidate for Senate, for the Senate in Minnesota. He's running against Al Franken in the primary. And you can check him out. Go to jackforsenate.org. That's Jack Nelson Pallmeyer. He is in the Democratic primary running against Al Franken. So we'll talk with him in about an hour. One thing that zipped by, not under the radar last week, I saw it, and I did take some notes about it, but didn't get to it. I don't know how many of you are familiar with political author Norman Finkelstein. Yeah, he's Jewish. He's an author. He's written 5 books. One is Beyond Chutzpah, on the misuse of anti-Semitism and the abuse of history. The other one is, and this is the one that caused an awful lot of controversy, The Holocaust Industry, Reflections on the Exploitation of Jewish Suffering. He also wrote Image and Reality of the Israel-Palestine Conflict. He wrote A Nation on Trial, and he also wrote The Rise and Fall of Palestine, A Personal Account of the Intifada Years. And in April 2005, Finkelstein was the presenter for an hour-long documentary called The Final Insult that was based on the Holocaust Industry that was to be broadcast on Channel 4 in the UK. He is also the subject of several independent film documentaries himself, and on and on and on. He was born in Brooklyn, New York. If you have read any of Norman Finkelstein's works, or you know he is, to say the least, controversial. He also was viciously attacked by, drawing a blank now, the attorney, Jewish attorney that worked for, to defend O.J. Simpson. And he's also a professor of, he's a law professor too. I'm sorry, I'm just blanking out here. An extreme effort was made to deny Finkelstein tenure at, I think it was DePaul University in Chicago, because of his controversial point of view, where it concerns most things Israeli and a lot of things that have to do with the Holocaust itself. In his first book, he dedicated the book this way: to my beloved parents, Marila Finkelstein, survivor of the Warsaw Ghetto, Majdanek concentration camp, and Zacharias Finkelstein, survivor of the Warsaw Ghetto and Auschwitz concentration camp. May I never forget or forgive what was done to them. He is not a Jew looking to be a revisionist. He is not a Jew attacking his religion, or its culture, or its philosophical underpinnings. That's not what Finkelstein is about. Why am I bringing him up? Well, last Friday, Finkelstein was denied entry into Israel. Finkelstein landed at Ben Gurion International Airport near Tel Aviv in the early morning of Friday, and was told by a representative of the Ministry of Interior that he would not be allowed into the country on so-called, quote, security grounds, end quote. That's according to his attorney, Michael Safard. Safard said, quote, this usually means a 10-year ban on entry, end quote. Finkelstein, it says here, who is Jewish and the son of Holocaust survivors, has written critical books on Israeli policies in the Palestinian territories and on what he called exploitation of the Jewish tragedy during World War II. Finkelstein has received, with the fierce disapproval of some authors and academics, or has been received, while others have praised his controversial works. Dershowitz, thanks everybody. Yes, Alan Dershowitz was the law professor who absolutely worked and succeeded in denying Finkelstein tenure. And I don't get Dershowitz. I don't understand him. He's also someone who supports the idea of torture. I can't get my mind around Dershowitz. I just can't. But he, I would rather be around one Finkelstein than 1,000 Dershowitzes, believe me. So the story blew right on by. I was going to mention it last week and just didn't get to it. Denying entry. Now, whatever your feelings are about the state of Israel and its validity or what have you, let's not go there. Let's just take a look at the fact that it does exist and why it was founded. and to deny entry to a Jewish man who is one step removed from the death camps and the Polish ghetto, the Warsaw ghetto in Poland during World War II, the horrors that were inflicted on the Jews. And here is this guy, Finkelstein, who's just one step removed from that. And the bastards, the Likudniks, who feel so threatened. This is so much like Bush. This is so much like the generals who run Burma. It is the typical attitude of dictators or totalitarians. If you don't follow the party line, somehow, some way, we will harm you. We will either put you under house arrest, as they have in Burma, with the woman who has worked for Burmese civil rights, human rights, for how long now? They will send you to a gulag, as Solzhenitsyn wrote about in Russia. They will send you, or in the Soviet Union, they will send you to mental hospitals, as is so common in totalitarian states, if you dare speak out against the regime. Or in this case, because Israel is a democracy, Israel is a modern state, Israel is fill in the blank, in this case, they just declare him persona non grata and say they are not going to allow him in because of security. So. No. Joe Lieberman. You know, why not deny entry to Israel to Joe Lieberman? Seriously. Why not deny entry to Israel to Joe Lieberman? Why? He is scheduled to headline this psychotic Pastor John Hagee's 2008 Christians United for Israel summit this July 22nd. Now, we played some sound for you last week, or have some comments, about Lieberman at last year's Christians United for Israel meeting, where he called, Lieberman called John Hagee an Ish Elohim, or a man of God. Ish Elohim, the man who said that Hitler was sent by God? The man who said that the Holocaust was God's way of driving the Jews to Palestine? The man who said that New Orleans was decimated because they were going to have a homosexual rally the next day? The man who said that the Catholic Church is the great whore? And Lieberman is going to share a stage with this pig at the Christians United for Israel summit this July 22nd. Why not? And Hagee will tell you that every Jew eventually, every Jew who does not accept Jesus will be put to the knife, will be murdered by righteous Christians. And Lieberman is supporting this? Why don't the Israelis deny Lieberman entry?
From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, Max Blumenthal, writing at thenation.com, suggested that, or gets the truth out here about John Hagee's, or Joe Lieberman's scheduled as the headliner at so-called Pastor John Hagee's 2008 Christians United for Israel. Now, this comes after McCain finally ended his relationship with Hagee, when one of the sermons by this freak describing the Holocaust as the will of God registered on the mainstream media's radar. If you're a true believer, of course the Holocaust was the will of God. Nothing happens that is not the will of God, right? I mean, this is the sickness, as far as I'm concerned, of religious belief. You know, if your child is brutally murdered by some unknown creature, that's the will of God. No, screw that. No, no. But anyway, someone like John Hagee is all too quick to describe horrific events, whether they are collective or singular, as being the will of this disturbed God of his. Now, McCain said, quote, obviously, I find these remarks and others deeply offensive and indefensible, and I repudiate them. I did not know of them before Reverend Hagee's endorsement, and I feel I must reject his endorsement as well. This is what, end quote. McCain said that a week ago, May 22nd. Now, Lieberman, instead of distancing himself from these psychotic views, according to Max Blumenthal, Lieberman launched into a spirited defense of the televangelist, describing him as someone who, quote, represents a lot of people in this country, particularly Christians who care about the state of Israel, end quote. Is Lieberman a dumbass? Is he a complete dumbass? The only Christians of John Hagee's stripe who care about Israel are the ones who see it as a the state of Israel as a necessary step in the fulfillment of their psychotic, massively insane, Armageddonist philosophy. And doesn't Lieberman, who is supposed to be a brilliant man, is he not understand that the Christians have already of Hagee's stripe have already said that no matter how many Jews decide to become Christian at the last moment to save them from having their heads taken off, only 144,000 will be allowed in, which represents 12,000 from each of the 12 original tribes, right? Son of a bitch! So Lieberman is associating with this kind of madness? Why? Will someone tell me why? Israel needs these Christian asses about as much as Israel needs a national cancer. They don't need these people. So why? What is this? What is this with certain prominent Jews in this country that they allow themselves to be associated with these psychotic Christian freaks who are no more preaching the gospel of Jesus than they are preaching the gospel of anything? They're crazed, absolutely crazed. And Lieberman, oh, no, that's all right. Lieberman is married to the daughter of Holocaust survivors. Now, Lieberman's an Orthodox Jew. Maybe he does believe that the Holocaust was God's punishment. I don't know. If he does, I think that's sicker than sick. But why doesn't Lieberman end his relationship with Hagee unless he agrees with Hagee that New Orleans was wiped out because there was going to be a gay rights parade the next day, which nobody even knows if that's true? That I mean, all this madness that Hagee spews out. Does Lieberman believe that the Roman Catholic Church is the great whore? Maybe he does, as talked about in Revelation. Maybe he does. After all, the Catholic Church was openly complicit in the butchery of 6 million Jews in Central Europe during World War II. So maybe Lieberman is okay with this. But does Lieberman not understand? What? Does Lieberman think that if this sick incarnation of God appears on this planet, that he, Lieberman, is going to be spared? Does he believe that? Maybe he believes that. Does Lieberman plan on converting to Christianity on that great getting up morning? Is that what Lieberman is thinking? Well, I'll be okay because I'll become a Christian. Really? But if you're not planning that, Joe, then prepare to have Hagee take up a knife and cut your throat. It says so in the Bible. Ah, I can't. And Lieberman claims that one of one of Lieberman's greatest assets is his moral fiber and his independence, right? Huh? Doesn't he? I don't get this. I hate to belabor the point because I know we brought this up last week, and this show is starting to sink into this religious morass, it seems, more often than I'd like it to. But so much of what is happening right now has its basis in these three sick interpretations of these three religions. It's awful. It's just awful. So Joe Lieberman is going to align himself with a man who will cut the heads off little Jewish children when Jesus comes back if they don't immediately denounce Judaism and become Christians. How do you do that, Joe? How do you do that? How do you justify that, Senator Lieberman? Where in Torah does it talk about this? What in the establishment of the State of Israel, where does it say this? I mean, I don't know. These are not challenges, Senator. These are questions. Where does it say this stuff? Why are you associating yourself with an obvious madman? The survival of Israel is not necessary for any of this. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. Don't forget, coming up here in about 30 minutes, Jack Nelson Pallmeyer. He is candidate for Senate in Minnesota. He is running in the Democratic primary against Al Franken. And you can find out about him by going to jackforsenate.org. Let's do some phone calls real quick here. LaShonda is calling from Austin, Texas. LaShonda, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
I am good. I just called to share two things with you. The first, you opened the show talking about Memorial Day. And, oh, my goodness, Mike, I had a weird thing happen to me yesterday.
What happened?
I went to a barbecue, and everybody there was white and Republican but me.
You went to a Republican barbecue?
You know, my husband's white, and I'm black. And so it was his side of the family.
Really? Is he a Republican, or is it just the family?
It's just the family. Once he hooked up with me, he just became liberal as hell.
Well, that's what I'm telling you. Know, that's what I would think.
Yeah. So they were just sitting around, man. See, I've never experienced that type of thing because I am originally from Detroit, and you know what Detroit is like. It's not
sure.
Like Texas.
No, not even a little bit.
So when I get here, it's like the ultimate culture shock. But they were sitting around yesterday, man, just talking about why they messing with Karl Rove. Karl Rove ain't did nothing to nobody. I'm paraphrasing them. Karl Rove ain't did nothing to nobody. They need to leave him alone, and Congress needs to get some business. Then, wait, it gets even weirder. Then they start talking about Ted Kennedy's brain cancer, talking about is he dead yet?
Then
it was like, well, he probably released some cancer bill that he was working on. He already knew he was sick, so he's just going to use the money to try to do more liberal projects. Mike, I had to get up and go straight up, no joke. I was about to have an anxiety attack. I had to get up and go smoke a cigarette in the truck. I listened to A Night in Tunisia by Charlie Parker. And I smoked my Newport real slow.
Oh, God, LaShonda. I couldn't do that. I could not do that in the first place. I couldn't have gone. you know, to that kind of a gathering or a party, what have you. But, man, once there, in Texas, they carry guns and stuff. Of course, so do I. But, I mean, in Texas where they carry guns, somebody would have shot me. Because
you
I would,
see?
You know, I would have said something. I can't handle that. That's insanity. I can't believe that people in this country. Of course, you did say it was white people, so that explains a lot.
So I'm calling my friends back home, and I'm like in the truck whispering, like, "Dog, you ain't gonna believe this. I am at this Republican barbecue with my in-laws, and they is tripping. Help me! Somebody send somebody from the hood."
No, you're in Texas. They're in Detroit. Forget about it. You're on your own, right?
Yes. So the second thing that I was calling about was I came across this really fascinating book this past weekend. And it's been out apparently since 96. It's called The Fourth Turning. Have you heard about this?
I have not.
The Fourth Turning is this historical book. There are these two guys that sit around and they would study, like, historical cycles. Because for a while, since all this stuff has been going on, I'm like, it's almost as though we're stuck in some weird time loop where history is about to repeat itself.
Mm.
And these people actually document America from, you know, before we became America, back when we were, like, you know, trying to get away from England. They chronicled how these cycles would happen. There was,
right,
like, you know, an upturn. Everything in the economy was great.
Right.
People were happy. And then they get this spiritual awakening, like things are not what's supposed to be. And then it becomes this social upheaval and disorder. And then there's a rebirth of a brand new culture out of it. It was just fascinating, and
mm-hmm.
I was glad to see that I was not the only one.
What's it called?
Yeah. It's called The Fourth Turning.
And it's a book.
It's a book, yeah. It's been out since 96.
Oh, well, I'm just absolutely not familiar with it.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to have a small publishing, but they've got a site, and they've got excerpts from the book where they explain how they break it down into mm-hmm. the different cultures and generations.
If you would, the next time you send me an email, if you just put the title in there again.
Okay.
So that I can, you know, check around. Maybe I can buy it off of Amazon or something, or go to the bookstore around here and see if I can.
On Amazon, it's like a 6 to 8 week waiting list.
Oh, never mind. I hate to do that anyway. I'd much rather go to these local little bookstores, you know.
Yeah, but that's all I wanted to call you.
Well, thanks for the Memorial Day story. Good Lord, I got to ask, how do all these white people accept you?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I treat everybody the same, and the way I call into your show, that's how I am 24/7. So, you know, you could be my friend, and we'll be cool. I'll share my chicken, but if you tripping, you got to get out.
But that's what I mean. To a lot of white folks, especially Texas white folks, don't they have the attitude, wait a minute, girl, you're on our territory. So, you know, there won't be no chicken sharing unless you're the one that owned the chicken.
Right. I try to, you know, keep my mouth shut, you know what I'm saying? My grandparents grew up in the civil rights era, so they already schooled me before I got here.
Right.
So it's all good, you know. I try to play that role, but when I get home, call Mike Malloy, I talk all kind of stuff.
You do, don't you? But if you can see the humor in it, and I have to admit, there is some a very strange, dark humor in all this kind of stuff. If you can see humor in it, good for you. I'm kind of beyond the humor point. Kathy and I were just talking about this today, about, you know, I just sometimes I truly wish I could just go do something else, you know, lay bricks or go back to, I don't know, working at CNN or something, because some of this stuff just gets so damned upsetting. And
how do you deal with that? I mean, I've always wanted to ask you that. How do you
deal
with that?
Well, that's why I'm asking you, how you deal with it. I guess you just do, don't you?
I deal with it. I've got a couple of herbs and spices to help me out. But I deal with it.
Nutmeg, I know. All right, behave yourself, all right?
All right, Mike, y'all take care.
All right, thanks, LaShonda. Thanks,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Man, that's a brave young woman. Texas white people. Yee-haw! Len is calling from New York, listening on the internet. Hey, Len.
Hi, Mike. I just happened to tune in and caught you talking about Lieberman.
Yeah.
And you have to understand, every Saturday in synagogue, I have this same argument with everyone who I start the conversation with. How can you align yourself with fundamentally with a bunch of right-wing Christians
right.
whose ultimate intent is to see your destruction? And it's a dissonance they cannot deal with. They just cannot deal with the reality of what they're doing. It is unbelievable.
Well, what do they do? What do they do? Do they say, "Len, sit down, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about"?
No, they sort of give up on the argument. You know, like they, you know, some people go, "Oh, you know, he's the only real liberal around here. I don't think you can find anything to agree with him." And I just respond by saying, "I will argue the point until you can't speak anymore."
Well, you know, it's to me this is not a liberal or conservative thing. If anything, it is almost a theological thing.
You know, want to hear the weirdest thing? So I was looking for the word, and it was expediency, right?
Yeah.
So I wanted to look up the definition of expediency. I Googled it, and the first one offer that came up was the freedictionary.com or whatever.
Right.
And before it gets to the definition of expediency, there is a little ad for humanevents.com, Barack Obama exposed.
You're right.
Is this too much of a right-wing conspiracy for any of your possible conservative listeners to tune into?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you, Len.
You know, my wife is listening, trying to understand what they're saying. You know, the famous line you'll hear the entire campaign is, "There's so much we don't know about him." And that's because they don't want to admit what they do know about him, is he's someone who's intending to change this country for the betterment of the average Joe.
Right, right. Unless the average Joe is Lieberman, right? You knew I was going to say that. Hey, I got to leave it there, Len. Thanks, man.
Take care.
All right, I appreciate it. Take care. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Tree hugging, peace loving, pot smoking, porn watching, lazy ass hippies like me. Tree hugging, love making, pro choice and gay wedding, widespread digging hippies like me. Skin color blinded, conspiracy minded, protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing, and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jail by conservative Christian, right-wing Republican, straight white American.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Here comes the revolution. Time for retribution.
Revolution. 21 past the hour. Right after the next break, Jack Nelson Pallmeyer will join us. He's a candidate for a Democratic nominee to be a senator from Minnesota up against, who's that freak? Norm Coleman, yeah. And he is running in the primary against Al Franken in that state. You can find out what his positions are by going to jackforsenate.org, where I spent a little time this evening and... certainly looks like the kind of candidate we need in Washington. For real. For real. Absolutely. If you watch tonight's countdown with Keith Olbermann, it was revealed that former Senator Phil Graham, who is a general co-chair of John McCain's presidential campaign, actually lobbied Congress on behalf of UBS, the inter-global financial giant, to try, Graham tried to stop legislation from passing that was aimed at installing industry regulations that could have prevented the current mortgage foreclosure crisis. As it says at Crooks and Liars, as with many issues, McCain has done a full flip-flop on the mortgage crisis. into the gaff-filled train wreck that is his campaign, as the gaff-filled train wreck that is his campaign continues to fall deeper into the muck. But can you imagine the outrage from the right-wing crazies in this country and McCain's media if Graham worked for a Democratic candidate's campaign? Oh, my God. So Graham was being paid by UBS to lobby the Senate about the mortgage crisis. His position was no government regulation. Let these rapacious sons of bitches continue. Graham's job was to help kill a 2006 anti-predatory lending bill that would have tightened consumer protections and might have mitigated the current crisis. It wouldn't have wiped it out, but it might have made it not quite as bad as it is. McCain has said that Graham would be his what? His Secretary of Commerce? I'll tell you, if anyone who votes for McCain, you poor ass Republicans out there who will vote for anything with an R behind its name, even if it's something that wants to devour you, rip your children to pieces, take your home, destroy your spouse's employment chances, you'll still vote for that person, won't you? You people are crazy. You really are crazy. Jesus, God, if you can't bring yourself to vote for the party that has done everything in the history of this nation that resulted in something good, okay. In recent history, going back at least 100 years, and that would be the Democratic Party, if you can't vote for that party, then why don't you just stay your ass at home? Or go vote for, pick an independent candidate. Vote for Bob Barr. Vote for the Libertarian. But why would you want to vote for John McCain, who apparently is dumber than dog snot where it concerns most of the issues, and who has a general campaign co-chair who wants to see more people losing their homes? For God's sake, what's wrong with you Republicans? You make no sense. Not only do you not make sense, but why do you stand there in front of your bathroom mirror dragging a straight razor across your own throats? What's up with that? You masochistic jerks. What the hell? And because you vote for a Republican, decent Americans have to put up with Republican administrations. My God. This so-called breaking news will mean absolutely nothing. I keep thinking about the white Republicans LaShonda hung out with yesterday in Texas. Will mean absolutely nothing to them. Absolutely nothing. To Republicans, black or white, are there still black Republicans? Oh, you all are crazy. Gay Republicans, what's up with that? But Republicans across the country will hear this story about Phil Graham say, well, you know, it's free enterprise. Everybody has a right to lobby for whatever they think. This rapacious son of a bitch was lobbying to take forget him, Malone. Forget it. It doesn't mean anything. Democrats, liberals, progressives, people with sense would never vote for a Republican candidate anyway. So I can sit here and bitch and scream about this until hell freezes over, and it would mean absolutely nothing to the people it should mean something to, and that those people are these sorry, sorry Republicans. All right, stick around. We'll be back with... right after the break with Jack Nelson Pallmeyer, who is running for the Senate in Minnesota. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your skies. Welcome to the new American.
It is 26 before the hour. All right, were you a good radio audience? Did you go to Jack Nelson Pallmeyer's website during the break? Let me see some hands. Oh, good, 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 good. Joining us now is Jack Nelson Pallmeyer, who is running for the Senate in the state of Minnesota. He is in a primary contest against just Al Franken, Jack. Is that it?
Correct, yeah.
So just the two of you left.
Right.
Oh, there only were two to begin with.
No, actually, there were four to begin with.
That's what I thought. I thought you had more than just you and.
But now it's down to the two of us.
I went to your website. I hope people do, especially the issues part. You are very clear, succinct, and to the point where it concerns your stand on the issues. Do you want to just kind of recap them for us?
Sure. I mean, very, very quickly, I'm calling this the most important decade, and I mean that. The decisions we make in the next few years are going to determine the quality of life forever, so we better get our priorities straight. So for me, we have only a couple of years to address climate change, and I take that very seriously, and if we do, we can stop fighting wars for oil, and we can build a renewable energy economy, and at the same time stop borrowing trillions of dollars to pay for imported oil. So that's high priority number one. The second one is, I just tell people, you know, as long as this country spends half the world's military spending, let's be honest and say we're not going to have a healthcare system and an education system or an economy that works. So not only do we need to end the occupation of Iraq, which is bankrupting the country, we need a fundamental reassessment of this country's role in the world. And I believe that the world demands it, and I believe that we would be much more secure if we form global partnerships rather than engage in unilateral action.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of the third area for me is we need a tax system, an economy, and social priorities that serve the common good. So I am for, in that framework, I'm for a national healthcare system. Why don't we as a country do what every other industrial country in the world does, which is they force the health insurance industry and pharmaceutical industry to play a role that we define rather than let them define our healthcare system that leaves 50 million people out. So those are some of the priorities. And what I'm excited about is we're really building a citizen movement base here in Minnesota to, I think, be strong enough to raise those issues to the point where I think we can maybe shift priorities.
It is almost well. It certainly is a challenge to prioritize those three issues. I agree with you. I think the global climate change issue is the singular issue of our generation. If that's not addressed, then we are well. I don't know.
We're in bad shape.
We're in terrible shape, right? This dumping of resources into Bush's wars and the has got to stop. But the thing also at your website, you are one of the few people, candidates that we have had on. We've had progressives on, but you're, I think, one of the few, if not the only one, who uses the term single payer health care.
Yeah.
A lot of them say comprehensive or universal, yada, 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 but single payer means something specifically.
Right.
And it was good to see that on your website. What can people who listen to this program around the country, and we have people listen on Sirius Satellite Radio, on XM, on the Internet, on radio stations, what can they do to help your campaign?
Well, first, I hope they will visit the website and see that this is a very serious campaign. And just so you know, your listeners know, we're doing very, very well. And there's been pretty much a sea change in the race over the last 2 months. That corresponds in Minnesota to we have eight congressional districts, and there are conventions in each of those districts. And we've been doing very well ever since people have gotten a chance to hear me and see the network we have in place. But if you want to help, probably a couple of things you can do. One is we're always looking for financial contributions. We're a grassroots campaign, and that helps. But secondly, please share the website with all of your friends, all of your networks. We have certainly a statewide, and I think we're beginning to create a nationwide buzz about this campaign. You know, the seat that I'm running for is a seat that Paul Wellstone held, and I think he was respected nationwide as someone who would challenge corporate power, that would be willing to speak out and vote his conscience rather than give in to all kinds of pressures. And That's the kind of candidate that I am and the kind of senator I will be. And so I hope that people will help create the buzz around this campaign and help me to build what we really need in this country is a nationwide citizen movement that is strong enough to force the shift in priorities that we were talking about earlier.
Do you at this point support one of the two Democratic nominees for president, or presumed nominees, one of the two?
Well, you can call me up on June 8th after okay. after the party endorsement, and I'll be glad to answer that question. But I will say now, and I think that this is actually important, it's what I tell anyone in Minnesota who asked me that question, too, that I really believe the success of my campaign, which is rooted in absolute honesty about the crisis that we face, with a hopeful vision of where we can go, if we're honest, and then a call to action, and calling for, I'm calling for a domestic Marshall Plan type effort to build a renewable energy economy, and mm-hmm. calling for national single-payer health care. These are the issues that are really resonating with average Minnesotans who are worried about their health care
right.
and
right.
want to end the war. And I think what I'm demonstrating is that you can have a candidate that is absolutely candid and honest as long as it comes with a message of hope and possibility. And I'm hoping the success of my campaign will encourage the presidential candidates, either one of them, to be bolder in their concrete policies. Because here's the two fundamental things that we have to do. Again, we have to address climate change. I don't see in Washington right now the policies that are really serious about cutting carbon emissions by 80 or 90% by 2030, which is probably the longest stretch of time that we have. It may mm-hmm. be compressed even further.
Right.
They're not offering the bold policy we need. And on reassessing this country's role in the world and ending the Iraq War, I want both candidates to be much more specific and lead us at a time when we need these fundamental changes. So I'm not trying to avoid your question exactly, although I do need Hillary Jack supporters and I need Barack Obama Jack supporters. So until after that endorsing convention on June 7th, I'm not going to come out publicly.
Mm-hmm.
But I do mean it when I say I believe the success of my campaign is important to pushing a national agenda in the direction that we need to go.
Well, that was kind of the direction I was coming from in the question, because neither of the two Democratic remaining Democratic candidates are on the same page as you are, whereas I think progressive liberal Democrats who are determined to change a policy in this country, whether it's domestic or foreign, are on the same
right.
page with you.
And I would even add to that, Mike, I would say that what I am finding is that average citizens in this state, they want single-payer health care.
Sure.
They may need it explained to them that it doesn't mean they can't choose their doctor and they can't choose their hospital. They
right.
need a little explanation. But believe me, they are ready for a national health care.
Yeah, I think that's true across the country. There is so much misinformation that was put out by the so-called medical industrial complex back during the early 90s with Hillary's plan that was not all that different from what's out there now or what was out there then. But the misinformation is appalling of what people think when they hear the term single-payer health care.
Exactly.
So,
and similar things on the Iraq War. I mean, people want and the Iraq War. I think the reason people haven't been talking about the Iraq War is because they're so frustrated that it goes on. But people want it over. And, you know, I think one of the things I'm doing in my campaign is trying to make that issue connect well to people's lives and connect to our economic crisis. You know, I just point out one day of Iraq War spending,
mm-hmm.
we could hire 9,300 teachers for a year.
Yeah.
We're going to spend more money to occupy Iraq this year than the entire road and highway budget of the United States, and we've got bridges falling down. So
it's astonishing the amount of treasure, not to mention the human lives,
the
Iraqi
human
and American
lives.
that has gone down the commode. How are you? This is one of those tacky political questions. How are you polling against your opponent? The Democratic opponent.
Well, I would say we're close to dead even now.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting to see the shift in the last 2 months. And, you know, Minnesota has a a unique system. We have a caucus system. It begins in February in small neighborhood groups, and then it kind of gets goes from there, and it culminates in an endorsing convention in June, which is what we're leading up to now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, keep in mind, I didn't enter this race until the middle of October. So, and Al Franken had been running for a year and a half, essentially.
Actually, longer than that.
And longer than that, yeah, for a couple of years.
Trust me on that.
Yeah. So, you know, we've just made tremendous progress, and every day that goes by, mm-hmm. we're generating more and more support. So I really feel that the tide has turned, and, again, people, this should be a message, I think, to others around the country, that if we offer a progressive message, if we demonstrate a capacity to really listen to people, which I've held listening sessions all over the state and will continue doing that, and if we call people to action, people are ready. And I think what we have seen over the last number of years is an almost complete absence of political courage and leadership.
Oh, my, yeah.
So I really believe that, I guess that was my point earlier to what you were saying, is that it's the progressive, you know, you can call my message progressive, and I think it is, but I would also call it mainstream in terms of addressing the pressing needs that most citizens are feeling right now.
Oh, I agree. I think the use of some of these labels has just gotten totally out of hand, and so many Americans are not aware of how important these mainstream issues are. They've been labeled by media. They've been labeled by Republicans to be fringe issues when they are heartland issues.
Exactly.
Listen, Jack, I hope this goes well for you. And once you win the Democratic primary, let's talk again as you're going after Norm Coleman, okay?
All right. Well, this will be the party endorsement first, and then hopefully there won't be a primary, and we'll take Norm on in November. And I hope your listeners will follow the race. JackPresented.org.
They'll do it. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. Take
all
care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Jack Fork. Senate.org. It's about 9 before the hour. Go to Jack for Congress, seriously. I'm sorry, jackforsenate.org. This guy is very, very much the type of senator that I think normal Americans need, really need. So please go to his website. Just take a look, all right? And if you're inclined to talk him up or send a $10 bill, that's entirely up to you, but just check this guy out. I've been asked to mention this Wednesday. That's tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. This is for people who live in New York City, live in Manhattan, at St. Mark's Church, 2nd Avenue and 10th Street. There will be a rally. It's an initiative to get a new investigation of 9/11, the events of September 11, 2001, on the ballot this November. There's a website, nyc911initiative.org, nyc911initiative.org. But tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m., St. Mark's Church, 2nd Avenue and 10th Street in Manhattan, there will be a rally, speechifying. One of the speakers is Jesse Richard, who's one of the founders of TVNewsLies.org. Wayne Madsen will be there, William Rodriguez, Sander Hicks, John Feel. Rodriguez and Feel were both Well, Rodriguez was one of the people that survived the collapse of World Trade Center 1, I believe, and John Field was one of the first responders. But anyway, for people who live in New York City or New Jersey or Connecticut, if you're interested in this, tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m., St. Mark's Church, 2nd Avenue and 10th Street in Midtown Manhattan. Well, actually, on the, not the Lower East Side, but in the Village. Check it out. It's a rally to get a new investigation of 9/11 on the ballot this November. And if you want further information, can't make it to the event, NYC911initiative.org. All right? Yeah. As most of us know now, we have a spaceship that made a soft landing, made a rocket ship kind of landing on the surface of Mars. It is it's going to be a very effective and efficient laboratory that is going to take samples to find out about the presence of water, frozen or otherwise, on Mars. And the possible result of that would be whether or not life did exist or still exists on that planet. This, you know, I know we've gotten kind of jaded about this, and who cares, but, you know, I can't believe it was 40 years ago that we put people on the moon and haven't done anything since about, oh, well, it's a whole different topic. But I got an email here from one of our regulars, and the subject line is, just one damn fossilized microbe on Mars might relegate the Republicans and their superstitious religion to the dust heap of history where they belong. One can only hope. Come on, Phoenix, dig, 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 and find me a microbial Martian. That's very true. But see, the Pope is way ahead of everybody on this, because didn't the Pope, Pope Nazi the First, release something, or one of his science advisors? Yeah, I know. Think about that. Released something that said, well, there may be life, sentient life on other planets, and if so, they might even be free of original sin. So, you know, Pope Benedict, is it Benedict? Yeah, Pope Benedict? I don't know. The Nazi Pope. I know. I'm going to burn in hell for saying that. No, he was a member of the Nazi Party. The Nazi Pope has said that there just may be life on other planets, and that's part of God's plan, so don't worry about it. I think this is an anticipation, perhaps, maybe, you think, of what this Martian lander is going to come up with. You know, as far as the Pope's point of view, who cares? You know, really. I don't mean that in a disrespect, not quite as disrespectful as it sounds. You know, the Catholic Church has been punishing science since, for the past 2,000 years. So a statement like that, you know, they just finally got around to exonerating Galileo. So, you know, who cares? It's like a cartoon show. But the ones that I really want to see just twist up into little knots are the Protestant evangelical freaks who won't have the acuity to handle this. You know, the Catholic Church has handled everything. They've handled genocide. They've been a party to it. They have handled the invasions. They've handled the spreading of diseases, whether they were mental or physical. They have been assaulted. They've had warring popes. They've had crusades. I mean, the Catholic Church has really been through just about every nasty device imaginable in the sick, warped brain of mankind. But the Protestant evangelicals, you know, in first place, they haven't been around that long, the Protestants, to begin with. And the evangelicals have been around even shorter. So the evangelicals are the ones who are just going to curl up in a little ball like those little bugs and kind of freak out. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. So at Politico.com, you can get some information about former Press Secretary Scott McClellan, Scotty the Liar, as we used to refer to him, in a review of McClellan's new book. It's titled What Happened Inside the Bush White House and Washington's Culture of Deception. Well, Washington's culture of deception, since 1994, that's been exclusively Republican, so we know what Scotty is saying there. He writes that Bush veered terribly off course. He writes that Bush was not open and forthright on Iraq. He writes that Bush took a permanent campaign approach to governing at the expense of candor and competence. That means honesty and competence. According to Politico.com, among the most explosive revelations in the book, McClellan charges that Bush relied on propaganda to sell the war. No! Really, Scott? Son of a bitch, who would have thought? McClellan says the White House press corps was too easy on the administration during the run-up to the war. No! Really, Scott? Son of a bitch, who would have thought? He admits that some of his own assertions from the briefing room podium turned out to be, quote, badly misguided, end quote. No! Really, Scotty? You mean you were a goddamn liar? Badly misguided? When you become press secretary, you turn in your sense of honor, decency, justice, truth. You squirmy little pig. You're going to make a lot of money now, right? McClellan goes on to suggest that two top aides held a secret West Wing meeting to get their story straight about the CIA Valerie Plame leak case at a time when federal prosecutors were after them. And McClellan goes on to say that he was continuing to defend them despite evidence that they had not given him all the facts. Oh, Scotty, another victim, right? You didn't know what was going on, did you? Ah, you pig, you squealing little pig. McClellan asserts that the two aides, Karl Rove and Irving Libby, that would be Bush's senior advisor and Dick Cheney's chief of staff, respectively, quote, had at best misled him, end quote, about their role in the disclosure of Valerie Plame's identity. Misled you. Oh, you know, this is the part that makes me sick. This sweating pig was right in the middle of everything. How close to the Bush crime family did one have to be in order to take a look in the mirror at the end of the day and see the dung splattered all over your face, your hair, your tie, and your lapel pin? How close? As close as Scotty? I would think so, wouldn't you? But no! They lied to me! They misled me! Oh, they didn't tell me the truth! My dear president got off the track that he was on. He veered terribly off course. You scum-sucking little twit. I like what Politico say. Isn't this the way these rat bastards always do it, huh? Every single one of these rats that jump off this disgusting, stench-filled ship and then go write a book, huh? And reveal that while all this corruption was occurring, they either were unwilling participants or didn't know anything about it. Isn't that what the Nazis said at Nuremberg? I was only following orders. I knew nothing. I saw nothing. I heard nothing. I smelled nothing. Scott McClellan was one of George Walker Bush's earliest and most loyal political aides. And he knew nothing. I knew nothing. At political.com, it says most of his friends had expected him to take a few swipes at his former colleagues in order to sell books, but also to paint a largely affectionate portrait. Instead, McClellan's tone is often harsh. He writes, for example, that after Hurricane Katrina, the White House, quote, spent most of the first week in a state of denial, end quote. No! Really, Scotty? God damn, who'd have thought it? I'll be darned, really? And he blames Karl Rove for suggesting the photo of the president comfortably observing the disaster during an Air Force One flyover. No, really, Scotty? Well, I'll be damned. McClellan says he and counselor to the president, Dan Bartlett, had opposed the idea and thought it had been scrapped. But he writes that he later was told that, quote, Carl was convinced we needed to do it, and the president agreed, end quote. So, quote, one of the worst disasters in our nation's history became one of the biggest disasters in Bush's presidency. Katrina and the botched federal response to it would largely come to define the Bush's second term, he writes. Oh, it just goes on and on. The book begins with McClellan's statement to the press that he had talked with Rove and Libby and that they had assured him they were, quote, not involved in the leaking of classified information, end quote. Oh, okay, guys. Oh, thank you. He goes on to say, I had, quote, I had allowed myself to be deceived. Oh, gee, Scott, that's so sad. Into unknowingly passing along a falsehood, end quote. No, 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 no. Why use the language? Why not just say, hey, dumbasses, I was part of the plot. Stand there and lie to you simpletons every single day. McClellan also suggests that Libby and Rove secretly colluded to get their stories straight at a time when federal investigators were hot on the plane case. Well, isn't this indictable stuff? Huh? He also... He says, quote, the collapse of the administration's rationales for war, which became apparent months after our invasion, should never have come as such a surprise. Why, you miserable son of a bitch. You miserable little dog, you. Should not have come as a... Who was it a surprise to, Scott? The Republican twits in this country who watch Fox News and sat there with their mouths open and their hands down their pants while Fox News sold them a war? Is that who you're referring to? It did not come as a surprise to people that have an operating brain, you lard ass. He goes on to say, in this case, the liberal media didn't live up to its reputation. If it had, the country would have been better served. What? If it had, Mike, I say it in the book, why do I have to repeat it to you? If it had, the country would have been better served. That's what McClellan says in his book. The liberal media didn't live up to its reputation. If it had, the country would have been better served. Oh, my God. Now, control yourself, Mike. Don't start all that talk about taking someone out behind the nearest building and putting a bullet in the back of their head. Don't do that. Don't do that, because then the little right-wing twittish bloggers get to say, Mike Malloy's advocating violence again. What happened inside the Bush White House and Washington's culture of deception? I like what Politico.com puts at the first bullet point. McClellan charges that Bush relied on propaganda to sell the war. McClellan charges that? McClellan charges that? McClellan? Stop me. Stop me. Okay, stop me. Let's take a break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Choose not to see right from wrong. No use denying, we all know he's a lying. I'm talking about Scotty the Dog.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. I think it was during the reign of Scott McClellan as White House spokesgeek that I really started to lose it on the air and started using this terrible language that I've gotten in the habit of using now, not unlike bad drugs. And to people who are offended who still listen to the program, you know, I do apologize occasionally about this, the language that I use. And I'm not blaming it on McClellan. It's just that that's when I first started using bad language, lazy language. That's what cursing is. It's laziness. His lies were so blatant, and nobody was challenging him. Nobody. When he says the so-called liberal media dropped the ball, he's absolutely correct. Probably the only thing he's been correct about. We used to sit in here day night after night on this program. You remember this, Kathy, and just scream bloody murder. This is back in the Air America days. Just scream bloody murder about the absolute obvious display of deceit, deception, lies, inverted truths, just the butchering of reality by this quacking freak every single day. And nobody in the crack White House press corps was doing anything. Even our old reliables seemed to be too intimidated because, after all, we were at war. Hell yeah! Glory, hallelujah! We're marching on to war! We got to all be on the same page! If you challenge anything you say, we say you're with the enemy. So, and we just, I don't know, it was driving me insane. So that's my rationale for this nasty language, and the little creeping tendrils of violence that started to slip into what I was saying. That's where it started. It drove me insane. I mean, someone who is tuned in, as I have to be because of this job, that's the only reason I pay any mind to this madness that passes for political life or intergalactic relations or whatever the hell it is. You know, I am so willing to just check out for a while, just go away, live in the desert, live on top of a mountain. But no, like a lot of people, I've got to work. And since I don't have an honest job, it's got to be this. But I digress. I wish I would have set up a coffee importing company or something. But I digress again. Since this is what I do, it was impossible to not get just twisted by what we were hearing from this freak every single day, and how it was being sucked on like a huge lollipop by the White House press corps. And anybody with a third-grade education, no offense to third graders, was able to see through the lies and the deceptions, I mean, without even having your mind completely on it. You could be doing the New York Times crossword and realize that everything this freak was saying was an absolute lie. Look at this. I'm all upset again. I mean, Ari Fleischer was a Mossad agent. What the hell do you expect from him? Tony Snow was a shill for Fox News. Dana Perino, write her off. She doesn't matter. But this guy, McClellan. Let's play some of the Duck song. We used to play this a lot. Scotty, here's to you, you freak, in celebration of the release of your book.
Trusted, I'm already busted. They choose not to see.
We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Dances and prances and sings. Seen this before, like a pole dancing whore. He's a GOP scumbag who sings. White House keeps dying, the soldiers keep dying. Rose-colored glasses and say, here's the talking.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. We're going to come to your phone calls here in just a minute, I promise. This comes from ynetnews.com, letter Y, netnews.com, based in Israel. News for Israelis and Jews is, I believe that's their... I mean, if you're neither, you can still go there and find all kinds of good stories. I do. But they're describing in an article today something called Jerusalem Syndrome. You heard of that? It manifests as in psychosis, delusions with religious themes. It's very prevalent in devout tourists overwhelmed by a visit to the Israeli capital. And it mostly afflicts Christians. It's called the Jerusalem Syndrome. They're talking about a 38-year-old American tourist who was diagnosed as suffering from this Jerusalem Syndrome. He jumped off a walkway 13 feet up in the air, I guess, on Friday at a hospital in Tiberias. He broke several ribs, one of which punctured a lung. He smashed a vertebra in his back. He was placed in the intensive care unit. The article says the tourist was evacuated to the hospital along with his wife by the physician accompanying their tourist group. The couple told the medical staff they were devout Christians who had arrived in Israel 10 days earlier to tour various holy sites. Over the past few days, the husband began feeling anxious and suffered from insomnia. He roamed the hills surrounding the guest house he was staying at, muttering about Jesus. Dr. Tafiq Abu Nasser, doesn't sound Jewish to me, a senior psychiatrist at the hospital, said the man underwent a series of tests in the emergency room, including a psychiatric examination and blood test to determine whether he'd used hallucinogenic drugs. Dr. Abu Nasser said, then at some point, after he'd calmed down, he suddenly got up and left the ward. There's a walkway connecting the emergency room to the other wards. He just climbed the wall next to it and jumped. According to the doctor, the man is most likely suffering from the well-documented Jerusalem syndrome. Dr. Abu Nasser said, quote, this psychotic state is brought on by visits to Jerusalem or the Galilee. It induces a state of religious ecstasy, which overcomes the tourists. They feel euphoric at being surrounded by so many holy sites. The state of mind is characterized by megalomania and delusions of grandeur. Those afflicted often believe they are the Messiah, or Jesus, or the Mahdi, depending on the religion and sect. They attempt to reconcile Jews and Palestinians. They speak to God and genuinely believe he answers them. End quote. Sounds like George Bush. Well, it is George Bush. You talk to God, it's called praying. God talks to you, it's called schizophrenia. Whew. Jerusalem Syndrome. That's a new one on me, Kathy. I'd never heard of Jerusalem Syndrome. Who was the American, was he an Anglican bishop, the kind of renegade guy back in the 60s or 70s who, I think he would do a lot of acid and walk into the deserts, into the Sinai or into the Negev or and have these religious visions. Who was that? He was very, very interesting to me, this guy. He was kind of a, I don't want to say hippie, he was ahead of his time. Was he Anglican? Was he Episcopalian? He was Episcopalian, that's right, Episcopalian American priest. Who was that guy? All right, some phone calls. I think that would be appropriate. Let's start with Sydney, who is calling from El Paso, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Sydney.
Hello, sir.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, sir. I guess I just want to say my name is Sydney Wooten. I love your show. I spent 5 years active duty military.
Mm-hmm.
I got out in 2000, December 2006. I was a military intelligence officer in the 101st Airborne Division. I guess to make a long story short, I'm out now, and it makes me angry, the war in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
really a war, is it, Sydney?
No, it's not. It's not like it was based off of false propaganda, and I don't know. I've just seen a lot of people and just destroyed their lives, and yeah. I guess now I'm trying to you know to pick up the shambles of my own life
sure.
as a result of it, I guess it just makes me like frustrated when I hear all these right wing people who never even served,
right,
sit there and talk about how great Bush is and another man who ran away from the war himself, or like you said, you don't even know if you can call it a war as far as the Vietnam conflict, but it just makes me angry the right wing people that keep supporting this and Bush will just keep getting away with it, and it breaks my heart.
How are you doing personally? After how long were you there, Sydney?
I spent 18 months in Iraq. I was in 3rd of the 502nd Infantry Division, the 101st Airborne Division. I was military intelligence officer.
Did you have one deployment?
What it was is I had one deployment. I did 13 months during the initial invasion from February 2003, January 2004, that I went home for a month, and my unit actually went back to the States in 2004, because I was a military intelligence officer, I had to stay about 7 months.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back for a month, and then I came back for the last 7 months. And when I came back, I was kind of outspoken, and I disagreed with the war in Iraq, with a lot of my soldiers, we talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted them to get the proper mental health care, and a lot of them weren't getting it, and I was very vocal about it, and they ended up putting me out of the military. For that reason, I went to go reenlist because I wanted to stay with my guys and whatnot, and they ended up and I ended up being denied that, which I guess worked out okay, but it was just really, really, really upsetting. Especially a lot of the guys that had children and whatnot, they came back and their whole lives were destroyed because of Bush's lies.
How are you? How are you doing? Are you okay? Are you coping? Do you have? Are you dealing with stuff left over from what you were involved in? I mean, I don't want to get too personal, but I'm just checking.
Yeah. I got a hold of a really, really good administration. It was called Veterans Against the Iraq War.
Right.
And I got a hold of them, and I've been doing good. I really have. I guess it's like scrambled eggs. You throw it on the grill and you just scramble them up. That's how my brain felt for a while.
Really.
I was 22 years old when I went over there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a whole nother world. It was a whole nother.
Mm-hmm.
whole other experience, and it's just sad. I wouldn't wish that upon anyone. I remember we were there for my first 2 weeks. I don't want to take up too much of your time and all.
No, go ahead. Your first 2 weeks, what?
Okay, well, my first 2 weeks in country, there was 18-year-old kid. His name was Petty. His last name was Petty. I don't remember his first name. I just remember his last name was Petty. And we're doing in processing him into the country. We're doing his security clearance and whatnot. And he told me, he's like, yeah, you know, I can't wait to get out there. And three days later, this guy had I don't want to be too graphic. I know we're on radio, but he got shot in the head on a patrol. He was only in country for 3 days. And he got shot, and so, you know, it was just, you know, a combination of different experiences like that. But for the most part, you know, I'm doing well. I'm working for a finance company.
Mm-hmm.
Life's going on. But it just makes me very, very upset that these people say that the soldiers support the war. But for the most part, they don't. They don't. I know a lot of guys, they're getting out, and their lives are just, you know, like I said, like scrambled eggs. And they don't support it. The right wing just makes me so angry.
What happened? Are you there, Sydney?
Pardon me, sir.
Oh, you're still there. Okay, I thought I heard a click. How did they handle what was going on back here with people saying, you know, this is a phony war or invasion that Bush lied. There was. I mean, you know, I would imagine when you're in a situation of that kind of combat, in occupation, so on and so forth, that you don't have time to stop and think about the debate going on back home, but it certainly must influence what you do, doesn't it? I mean, I don't know. Help us out here. Help us understand that.
When you're deployed, like when I was there, I felt like I was invincible. None of that stuff affected me when I was there because it was so we were brainwashed. Like, okay, this is our mission. This is what we're going to do. This is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was there, I didn't think about that too much. When I got back, that's when it really, really hit me. Mm-hmm. My buddy Jorge, you know, a great guy. He was an immigrant. You know, that's another thing that gets me hot. But, you know, he's an immigrant, came to this country, joined the military to get his citizenship. He was my subordinate, but a really good friend at the same time. He called me up. He's like, man, I can't get a job. I'm like, what do you mean you can't get a job? He's like, yeah, you know, this guy's down here. You know, he lives in South Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, I can't get a job. I've been having hard time applying, right, and whatnot. It's like his social skills, he just said, you know, went down. But for the most part, when you're there, you don't think about it. You just want to come home.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you just want to come home.
I hear you. Well, you're home.
Well, yeah, I guess it's, I've been home for the last 4 years, and I'm blessed to be here. And I love your show, and I do. I love your show. I listen to it almost every evening. You know, I get a little sleepy sometimes. You know, not because of your show, just because of the hour. But I really, really do enjoy your show. And I'm sorry if, you know, my words weren't constructed right.
No, your words are just fine, Sydney. Your words are just fine. And I appreciate you listening, and I hope you call in again, all right?
All right, thank you, sir. You have a good night, and keep up the good fight.
Hey, you too, pal. Thanks a lot. Thanks for checking in. We'll be back after the break.
Can you even look me in the eye? Let me tell you about hard work. Minimum wage with a baby on the way. Let me tell you about hard work. Rebuilding your house after the bomb took them away. Let me tell you about hard work. Building a bed out of a cardboard.
It's about 8 minutes before the hour, thanks to our crew. Ian Huff, who engineered and answered your calls. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch is the podcast manager. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Bob Alexander is our resident philosopher. Bridget Wolf, our writer in residence. And Sharon Gordy, military affairs correspondent. Catherine Bay is the executive producer. And if I haven't mentioned it lately, it'd be great if you become a Nova M founding member. Go to NovaMradio.com and find out how to do that. Plus, how are sales going? Have you heard, Kathy, on the Malloy Show t-shirts and sweatshirts and swag bags and what?
I have one.
Well, you got yours free. That's why you have one. All right. Marge is calling from Indiana. Hey, Marge. How are you?
Good evening, Michael.
Hi. Happy birthday. I said that to you. Never mind.
You sang it, as a matter of fact.
That's right. I sang
me
it.
Over.
That's right. I did.
These are your brains. These are your brains after Iraq.
That's true. Here I am. Hi.
Hi. You know, Sunday night, because I like music, and I listened to the concert from Washington for Memorial Day.
Yeah.
And by the way, if nobody told you at the start of the show, the other name for Memorial Day is Decoration Day. And I bring that up because WCPT only stays on during daylight hours.
Right.
And so I got to listen to a whole 7 minutes of your show tonight. Wow!
Really?
Yeah.
You can pick it up in Indiana. I find that kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, that was what I was going to ask you. You just said something about that was in the Air America days, which I think that sort of still is. So are you still talking to those people?
Am I still talking to whom?
Air America.
Oh, no, I hate them.
Well, I think that's the station.
WCPT is just independent. They carry programming from us, from Air America, from Jones Radio Network. It's very hard to tell all the players anymore. But as far as Air America and its owners, they turn my stomach, and they owe me a lot of money, which they will never pay, because they're lying, sneaking right wingers. Now, I love.
Well, that's the reason I brought it up. I want to make sure you were getting paid from somewhere or something. Or whatever.
Not from Air America. Now, I love Sam Cedar, and a couple of people are still attached to that network, but I wait for the day when they just sink beneath the sea of their own making of lies and deception.
Well, as the days get longer until June 21st, I'll get to listen to 7 minutes, 8 minutes. By God, I don't know. Wow.
I hope it's more than that. Oh, my God. You only get to listen to 7 or 8 minutes of the program. Well, that guarantees you keep your mental health, though, too, Marge.
Well, yeah. You know,
you listen too much to this program, and you're going to be walking around talking to parking meters and stuff. But
anyhow, you know, listening to that show Sunday night, we sure can't write some rousing patriotic songs with bands to play them and singers to sing them and to celebrate our great country.
That's true. That's
now if
we
could just get off our collective asses and go to war against the greedy, manipulative bastards that are in oil companies and banks, and yes, even the lazy corporate media, before they destroy it and us with it.
You're here. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
I completely agree.
You know, they, what can I tell you? I love the music. Oh, another thing that they've had recently, I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but PBS has been running what they call the American Experience. And the last couple of weeks, they had FDR.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an interesting line there. You know, some things just never change. The faces change, but some things never change.
Right, right.
When Hoover was still in office, he said, well, you know, the government can't do anything. We just got to wait and wait this out and, you know, see what happens with the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
FDR got in office with all his alphabet soup of various plans, the WPA, the CCC, and you name it and whatever.
Sure.
And he says, well, we'll try this. And then he said, and if that doesn't work, we'll try something else.
We'll try something else. Bless his heart. That's what you get from a Democrat. Hey, Marsh, we got to leave it there.
Oh, well, anyhow.
All right. Well, I'm glad you got 7 or 8 minutes. Maybe tomorrow night it'll be 9 or 10, I hope.
Well, we'll keep on going. One of these days, I'm going to get the whole damn show.
There you go. Marge, thanks.
Be good.
All right.
Take care.
And if not good, be consistent.
Thanks, Marge.
Bye-bye.
See you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.